Let's focus our discussion first on marijuana, okay? Marijuana has a very distinct smell, okay? I'm going to pass around just a little tiny bit, and I want you all to take a smell so you know when someone is smoking marijuana near you.
Ditto monkeys beware. Here's more of Bart Cop Radio.
Thanks and race today. Pass the marijuana any old kind of way. Pass the marijuana, give your thanks and race today. Pass the marijuana any old kind of way. But I like it when you back it up in a pint and you pass it around with the light. Make sure the mood is right, be it day or night. Let your mind take flight, make you feel so right. Pass the marijuana. Pass the marijuana my way.
His name is Mark Emery, and he's called the Prince of Pot. He claims to have sold more marijuana seeds than anyone in the world. The Canadian government, for the most part, has left Emery and his business alone.
Gee, I wonder what that's like, to live your life without the government on your back. That must be nice. Too bad we don't live in Canada. It sure would be nice to have the government mind their own damn business and not spend our hard-earned tax money tracking down people who might be putting a seed in the ground and then watering it. Oh, God, protect the children. He planted a seed and then he watered it. Oh, my God.
But to the U.S. government, he's one of the most wanted men in the drug world. Officials in the Drug Enforcement Administration want him extradited to the United States. They want him in an American jail, and they want him badly.
They are so afraid that somebody in America might have some fun when the government doesn't get a piece of it. They don't mind you buying some liquor because the government gets a piece of that on the taxes. But, oh, if you plant a seed in the ground and smoke what comes up, the government doesn't get a piece of that, so that makes it bad. That makes it wrong. And there are idiot assholes in the government who get a hard-on by tracking down people who are bothering nobody and putting them in jail. You're going to find out the United States government wants to put this guy in prison for the rest of his life. For the rest of his life. For transporting seeds, for mailing seeds to people, the rest of his life in prison. Meanwhile, what, you shoot a cop, you get, what, 20 years? If you beat your wife to death with your fist, what do you get, 7 years? If you pick up a hooker and kill her on the street, what do you get, 10, 12 years? I saw a thing in the paper, you know those college kids that torched, what was it, 12 churches? It says that carries a maximum of 20 years. Can you believe that? 12 churches, 20 years. What is that? 18 months per church? 18 months for destroying a church. And life for shipping a package of seeds that hurt nobody.
If you, the Canadian people, allow me to be extradited, you will never see me alive again.
Emery believes that marijuana is a wonderful healing drug. And that to criminalize it is just plain silly.
Do we want marijuana legal?
To his supporters, he's a hero. But to the United States DEA, Mark Emery is a drug kingpin who should be prosecuted in the U.S. for selling drugs to Americans.
Well, obviously he's not selling drugs. He's selling a seed that might possibly turn into some drug someday. But isn't marijuana the most harmless of all drugs? I don't guess any drug is harmless because the definition of a drug is that which affects your body. But compared to cigarettes? My God. Oh, speaking of, there's a Carol Burnett story there. I'm not trying to pick on Carol Burnett, but she's one of my least favorite people. If you remember years and years and years ago, she had a daughter, and she suspected her daughter might be smoking marijuana. So she read her diary and searched her room and basically took away all her rights. It's like living in bushland. Around the Burnett household, and she discovered her daughter was on pot, of course, addicted to pot. You know how that addicted to pot really rings true in Hollywood. So she sent her to some rehab place. Anyway, she got out, apparently no problem with pot. Years went by, she picked up cigarettes, And eventually she died of lung cancer. This is a girl who might be 40 years old now if she was alive, but no, she got involved with cigarettes and died of lung cancer. And I know, like with Dana Reeve, it's possible to die of lung cancer having never smoked cigarettes. But from what I understand, Carol Burnett's daughter smoked cigarettes after they made it through the pot crisis, unquote. She got hooked on cigarettes and then died of lung cancer. And it seems to me it's just plain as effing day. Nobody dies from marijuana. Everybody, not everybody, but a lot, 400,000 or 500,000 people a year die from cigarettes. But that's okay. The government gets a cut of the cigarette money, a big cut. So it's okay if you die from the harmful drug, but we don't want you anywhere near the much less harmless drug because we don't get a piece of the pie. And instead of being honest with you, we're going to get the churches riled up and we're going to have the reefer madness playing on every corner. And the crazy law and order types of the Republican Party are going to drill into your head again and again the evils of marijuana and it's ensnaring our youth and all the usual hocus pocus bogus bullshit. But that's how they make money. They lie to us.
Do you have any idea how many of your customers were Americans?
Yes, I would think that of the, I would say, 120,000 people I've dealt with, I'd say certainly 70,000 would have been Americans.
That's why John McKay, the U.S. Attorney for the Western District of Washington State, wants to bring Emory south, across the border. He's Canadian. Why is it the Americans who are going after him and not the Canadians?
Well, very simply, he's a drug dealer. He's dealing drugs into the United States, violating the laws of the United States, and we expect to extradite him and try him in the United States.
Americans can be so arrogant that we expect the whole world to follow our religiously insane, stupid laws. You know, think back to, anybody remember the old Voice of America? The way I remember it, the Voice of America was the beacon of truth. We had radio transmitters set up inside Germany that would blast the truth, unquote, to the East Germans and those stuck behind the Iron Curtain because it was illegal for them to hear the truth behind the Iron Curtain. So we broke their laws. Now, if we had a small army and Russia didn't like what we were doing, Russia, according to Bush rules, could invade America and kidnap whoever the president was and take him back to be put in jail in Russia for life because he broke the... How does a guy sitting in France break the laws of Germany? I don't understand it. How does a guy sitting in Thailand break the laws of Canada? It just makes no sense, you know? Hell, even going after the Escobar brothers in Colombia. If some guys are running cocaine farms in Colombia and smuggling the drugs out, well, what right does America have to go kidnap them out of their country and drag them to America? Hell, think about George Bush's old partner, Manuel Noriega. He was a CIA partner for all those years, and at some point he did something to piss off Bush. So we decided that we're going to go into Panama, a sovereign country, and just kidnap their leader, drug him back to America, and threw him in a jail and said, there you go, you crossed us. Well, how does that work? I don't understand. You would think America would enforce American laws on American soil and whatever, 12 miles out on the seas or whatever. But how in the world are we so arrogant that we insist that other countries have to follow our laws? That makes no sense. I don't get it. But it's drugs, and we have to throw all logic out the window. We have to let the invisible cloud being guide us.
For over a decade, Mark Emery sold marijuana seeds. Technically, that's illegal in British Columbia, but no one has ever gotten more than a slap on the wrist for doing it. Emery's headquarters since 2002, this store in Vancouver, which also sells marijuana paraphernalia, and the magazine Emery publishes, Cannabis Culture. Inside the magazine, a mail-order seed catalog, but not for gardeners.
This is a catalog that lists 550 different varieties of marijuana seeds.
Hang on, you have been selling 550 different kinds of seeds?
Yes. For height, you can get a short plant, a tall plant, a purple plant, a red plant, one that grows indoor, outdoor, one that's good for almost anything that ails you that I could have sold to you, and it would address whatever your needs are in regards to cannabis.
Somebody could order any one of these strains and you just put it in an envelope?
Yes, very simple, because you just need a number 10 business size envelope, and away it went in the mail for just 85 cents.
Emery claims to be the first marijuana seed vendor to sell seeds directly over the Internet. His website, Mark Emery Direct, sold seeds with names like Chocolate Chunk and The Hog, which sold at $275 Canadian dollars for just 10 seeds.
Look at the money we're talking about here. $285 for 10 seeds. Call it $30 a seed. I don't know if you've ever seen a marijuana seed. It's smaller than a match head. And the idea that those are worth $30 a piece for something the size, smaller than a match head. So in a quart jar, you could put, what, $500,000 worth of seeds in a quart jar? Now think about that. We could pay off Bush's debt if we legalized pot. Well, of course, it'd be a lot cheaper. You wouldn't have to sell for $30 a seed if it was legal. But, geez, if they legalized pot and sold a pack of, I guess you could do it like tobacco in that, you could sell a pack of 20 joints for, say, $20. A dollar a joint, you know, Madison Avenue and American Agriculture Business, you know, Archer Daniel Midnels, those kinds of people, they could probably get behind this. It might cost them a dollar a pack to produce very high quality marijuana, 20 cigarettes worth, and sell that for $20. You can let them keep three or four, put the other 15 towards the debt. Check it out. $30 a seed, and they have to make it illegal. And it's, of course, it's the illegality that makes it so expensive. I don't know if it made it into the editing on this, but they said in Canada, marijuana was number three behind maybe soybeans and alfalfa or something like that, or wheat, something like that. But marijuana is the third biggest cash crop in Canada, and that's as an underground thing. If people were allowed to grow it and sell it, geez, that's kind of like capitalism, isn't it? Wouldn't the market set the price for what it would bear? And why do we need the government on our back telling us what we're allowed to smoke, what we're allowed to eat, what we're allowed to plant, what we're allowed to grow? What happened to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? What happened to getting the government off our backs? Why don't they mind their own damn business? Why don't they take all the FBI agents that are going after marijuana seeds and put them on Osama? This is like in the late 90s when they had 700 FBI agents combing Arkansas for trailer tramps when they could have been checking out the reports of those Arabs that were taking lessons on flight simulators that didn't care how to take off or land. They had those reports, but there weren't enough agents to check out the reports because they were busy chasing Paula Jones wannabes. Same thing here. We could be tracking Osama. We could be shutting down terrorism worldwide, but no, we've taken people off that hunt and put them on the marijuana seed hunt. You know eventually what they're going to do. I have no doubt America will break the law. They will send an undercover team to Canada to kidnap this guy, and then they're going to drag him across the border and say, oh, he came to Washington State to sell some seeds personally, and we snatched him while he was here. And when he tries to say, no, that didn't happen, they're going to say, look, dude, you can plead guilty and do 30 years, or you can take your chances. You'll never, ever see the sunlight again. Just the way all these terror suspects at Bush, you know, like the American Taliban guy, whatever his name was. Seems like whenever a terror suspect goes on trial, he always pleads guilty because the government guarantees you up front. We guarantee you will never, ever see the sun again. You will never see your family again. You will be in solitary confinement the rest of your life if you don't plead guilty. And people get scared and they say, okay, I plead guilty. And then the government says, aha, he was so guilty, he pled guilty because he knew we had him. Our case was so ironclad. It was so open and shut. We had the guy. He had no choice but to plead guilty because he went against the mighty Bush clan. Oh, this is really, really rotten. This is an awful thing we're doing. Can you believe that we're taking people off the hunt for Osama to track down people who might put a marijuana seed in the mail?
The seeds he sold were used to grow a highly prized type of marijuana called British Columbia Bud, or BC Bud. Only the bud of the plant is sold for smoking, making it much more potent and expensive than it was back in the days when people smoked crushed marijuana leaves and went to Woodstock.
It is very powerful. It has a reputation. It's almost been marketed. This, you know, marijuana from British Columbia is great pot.
Wait, you mean these people are so evil? They're actually giving the buyer his money's worth? That's not right. That's just not American. In America, you're supposed to screw the guy, promise him a 10, and give him a 3. But in Canada, if you deal with these guys, and they promise you a 3, and you get a 4, oh, can't have that. Oh, no, can't have that.
And, of course, the whole idea was that I would help facilitate the growth of so much marijuana that the DEA and all the agencies of the United States would never be able to destroy it at the rate I would help create it, and that ultimately I, one man, would neutralize the work of the entire DEA with their multi-billion dollar budgets.
You know, it sounds a little pie in the sky, but it's true. One of God's miracles is that you can put a seed in the ground and it'll grow and it'll produce maybe 100 seeds. And those 100 seeds are going to be just as good as the first one. So now you've got 100. And then you plant those 100 seeds in the ground and they'll have 100 offspring. So now you've got 10,000. Yeah, when you multiply something by 100, very, very soon you're going to overtake the government's ability to keep a check on it. And apparently BC Bud is much more dangerous than all of Al-Qaeda put together. So we got to take agents off the hunt for terrorists and put them on the Canadian border and stop these devil seeds from growing in America. Christ, that makes no sense.
Why spend so much time and money investigating a seed seller? Because under U.S. law, selling seeds is the same as selling marijuana itself. And selling BC Bud makes Emery part of a multi-billion dollar business the U.S. wants to crush.
So maybe someone could explain why it is so important for the federal government to kill a multi-billion dollar industry. Why? It makes no sense.
We have a huge regional, national, and international issue here in the growing of marijuana in Lower British Columbia. That's a major problem for us.
Well, I hear you talking, but you don't say why. Why is it a problem? You've got a country where maybe 50 million people drink every day. But if 20 million want to smoke and mellow out instead of drinking and getting agitated, you know, you go to a bar and you get drunk and you start a fight. There's a lot of people that do that just because they can. Hey, let's get drunk and go fight. Oh, cool. When was the last time you heard of someone smoking a joint saying, hey, let's go look for a fight? That doesn't happen.
His activities are kind of at the leading edge of that marijuana problem.
And shame on the 60 Minutes guy for just sitting there and let this guy go on and on about the marijuana problem without saying, dude, what problem? What problems do you see? When marijuana comes into town, are there a lot more arrests for something? Does something happen to a town when a load of marijuana hits it? Or do the kids tend to disappear and put on their headphones and put on a CD and you don't hear from them for a couple hours? Is that the kind of problem your town's got?
Larry Campbell, a Canadian senator who formerly served on the drug squad of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, is well aware of Mark Emery.
The United States considers him a major drug trafficker.
Well, if they consider that, then they got bigger problems than I can even imagine. There's simply no way that he's a major anything.
What would the public reaction be here if Mark Emery is extradited to the States?
I think that there'd be outrage.
Outrage that the long arm of the U.S. law reached up into Canada to press charges against someone many Canadians consider harmless.
But you know, if there was some oil man or some big businessman in the, whatever, Bermuda somewhere that was making trillions of dollars stealing money from Americans, and you went to Bush and said, do something. He said, well, we can't. It's sovereign. We can't. We have no jurisdiction there. We can't go breaking the laws of other countries. But if the subject is marijuana, we throw every bit of logic out the window. We throw all the laws to the wolves. We just do what we want. We do what some preacher tells us. It's just crazy.
Do you think you're going to extradite him?
Yes, I do.
Do you realize what a political issue it's going to be in Canada?
We have full respect for the laws of Canada, for the sovereignty of Canada. We respect their laws, and they respect our laws, and he's violated our laws.
Sounds like somebody's already been convicted before he's even been arrested. That's another problem we got with these drugs. Anybody who would get near it is guilty up front. There's no need for a trial. And if Canada allows his kidnapping to go down, I hope the people of Canada vote the bastard out.
Actually, the laws aren't all that different. It's the punishment that is. For Emery, it's the difference between a modest fine or hard time. He awaits his fate in a simple apartment. He's never lived the lavish life of a drug dealer, since he claims to have given most of his money to the cause.
Go, Canucks, go.
He doesn't face any charges in Canada, but if he's extradited to the U.S., he'll face all the charges in his indictment, which include selling and distributing marijuana.
Is everything in the indictment against you true?
Everything that I could possibly verify is true. They have our customers, they have my methods, and they have copies of my website even in there, and those are all quite correct.
He said to us that nothing in the indictment is false. Everything in the indictment is true. He admits that on camera.
Right. Well, we expect to prove that with his help to a jury in the United States, and we expect to send him to prison for it.
Prison? How long?
Well, he faces conceivably up to life in prison. He has moved huge amounts of marijuana. The seeds are considered under U.S. law to be the same as marijuana plants and marijuana itself.
He could get life.
He could get life.
Well, I have a question. What if in America a woman has to be 21 to consent to sex, but in Canada she can consent to sex at 16? So then wouldn't it be incumbent on all of American law enforcement to search out anyone in Canada who's had sex with a woman under 21? Because under our laws, you know, the same way that a seed is marijuana, under our laws, the 20-year-old is a minor. So why don't we go after every son of a bitch in Canada who had sex with a woman who was under 21? The idea that we can make up our crazy rules and force the rest of the world to abide by them is just crazy on its face. Why won't somebody say something?
Don't let them send me away to their gulags.
While Emery, with the help of his supporters, is fighting his extradition to the U.S., he says he's resigned to the possibility of prison.
The public is on our side.
And even sees a potential benefit if it brings more attention to the legalization struggle.
I am blessed by what the DEA has done. I'd rather see marijuana legalized than me being saved from a U.S. jail.
And of course, this guy may not have all his oars in the water, too. The idea that he's willing, apparently, from what I hear, he's willing to do the rest of his life in prison to spread the good news of marijuana. I don't know. That's a little crazy. He's got some kind of martyr complex, which he may end up doing some good, but you always got to keep an extra eye on somebody who's willing to die for his cause when his cause is let's get high. It's one thing I'm willing to put my life on the line to save my country or something of that magnitude, but I don't know, the rest of your life in jail so others can get high? Not sure, dude. You might have been smoking a little too much of the good stuff.
Your language is pretty much that of a martyr.
It's the language I like to use is one of a person, a leader, who's confident and prepared to accept the punishment that noble purpose will bring about.
I'm not interested in his cause. I'm not interested in his political beliefs. What I'm interested in is the fact that he has distributed drugs in the United States, huge quantities of drugs. Now, he calls himself the Prince of Pot, but he may become the Prince of Federal Prison.
The Canadian courts will decide whether or not to hand Mark Emery over to the Americans. They've handed over drug dealers before. And with a newly elected conservative government in Canada, Emery fears that's likely to happen.
Several issues back, we talked about the president of Harvard. It turns out he is a bad, bad man because he asked a question. And the question he asked was, some data had come in saying that women weren't doing as well in science and math as the men were. And so the president of Harvard said, could it have something to do with their femininity? Is it possible that their physiological construction is a little different than men and therefore it pushes them away from doing better at science and math? And oh, the skies opened up and the thunderbolts rained down on this Harvard professor. His name is Lawrence Summers. And oh, what a bad man he must be because he asked the question. It's a fact, apparently. I don't have access to the data, but apparently it's a fact that women aren't doing as well as men in science and math. So he asked the question, basically, why? And for that, now he has lost his job. Harvard students lose as president quits. Lawrence Summers' forced resignation is a sad moment in the history of higher education. Universities are supposed to be a free marketplace of ideas. Every idea, opinion, or possible area of inquiry, however unpopular, seemingly crackpot, or out of vogue, should be allowed to be tested. Summers had the temerity to offer the possibility that various traits, characteristics, and abilities might not be distributed evenly across humanity. Imagine that. Now, see, they're trying to make him out to be some sexist pig who says women aren't smart enough to do X and Y. No, he didn't say that. He said we have a difference in, between the men and the women in math and science. I wonder if the difference could be their sexuality. And, oh, he had to be stopped for being such a criminal bastard. Why would the Harvard faculty act as if it's trying to reprise the academic equivalent of the Salem witch trials? Are these educators so close-minded and inimical, I-N-I-M-I-C-A-L, inimical? I had to turn my other computer off, so I can't look that word up. Wonder what it means. Probably means close-minded. Are these educators so close-minded and inimical to the notions of free inquiry and free speech that the mere suggestion of a possible explanation for a set of data merits a blanket condemnation? What is it that Harvard that condemns others' ideas without a trial? Has political correctness and free speech, as long as it aligned with our ideology, replaced the search for new knowledge at Harvard? Summers will enjoy great success after he leaves Harvard. So yeah, this man, I know a little bit what it's like to be, well, not crucified, but I've been beat up pretty good for asking a question before. And it just doesn't seem right. You know, it's one thing to ask a question. It's another thing to say, here's the truth, and I'm damn sure of it. And don't try to challenge me on me because I'm always right. Yeah, that's one thing. But to ask a question, he ought not to have been fired for that, but he was. Maybe Harvard's not the pointy-headed intellectual bastion that they make it out to be. Maybe the creation scientists have taken over there. But also, on the subject of old business, remember a while back I said, right after the first of the year, I said I wasn't going to say any more nice things about Texas athletes, because mostly because of them Dallas Cowgirls. I do not like Texas athletes. Obviously, that's kind of a generalization. I'm just saying, I went to school in Arkansas, and I live in Oklahoma, so Texas football is the enemy. They just are. Texas football is bad. So I said some nice things about this Vince Young because he single-handedly won the national championship for his team. Now they're giving him a bad time. They're saying he's not going to be drafted very high because, get this, he's too stupid. He took a thing, it's got a dumb name, what's it called? He took a test they use in the NFL called the Wunderlich IQ test. The Wunderlich IQ test says here, this one fellow years ago registered a perfect score on the test, which measured the ability to learn and solve problems. The Wunderlich exam must be completed within 12 minutes and has 50 questions that progress in difficulty. Here's a couple of questions. Is 11 p.m. before or after midnight? Well, duh, even I know that it's before midnight. Of course, he thought, that was a critical question because of curfew, right? One year, a Notre Dame player was asked, are you a good mixer? He wasn't sure if they meant, could he tend bar or turntables on a rap video? It meant neither. Could he mix in with other people is what they meant to say. So what they have here, I remember decades ago, Saturday Night Live did a skit on this. It'd be great to have a library. I could just punch it and call it up. But the idea that if you're black, some words are going to mean different things, like the word mixer. If they say, are you a good mixer? Yeah. Give me a turntable, I can mix with the best of them. But no, what they meant was, are you good at mixing in a room full of white millionaires? What they're saying now, though, is this Vince Young may be too stupid. They said he only got 12 out of the 50 questions right. So he may be too stupid to be the quarterback of an NFL team. But, you know, I'm old enough to remember there's another guy who they said was so stupid that he couldn't spell cat if you gave him the C and the A up front. That was spoken by Hollywood Henderson, who had to do time for rape because he raped a woman in a wheelchair. I'm not saying it's okay to rape women who aren't in a wheelchair, but as rapist goes, you know, you're a scumbag rapist, A. Now, B, you raped a woman in a wheelchair. It's like you couldn't even rape a woman that could fight back. You know, it's like raping a woman in a coma. You know, I'm not saying rape is good in any situation. I'm just saying raping a woman in a wheelchair, by definition, just kind of has to be worse than raping a woman who's not. But anyway, Hollywood Henderson, that's what he said. You couldn't spell cat if they spied you the CNA. He said that about Terry Bradshaw. I doubt there's anyone listening to this doesn't know who Terry Bradshaw is. But, you know, Terry Bradshaw has 4 Super Bowl rings, 4 times. He took his team to the Super Bowl and won. Getting to the Super Bowl is one thing. Winning the Super Bowl is something else. Winning 4 times. I don't know if anyone's ever done that besides Terry Bradshaw. But how nice for Vincent Young to be in that, to be thought of. Oh, you're stupid like Terry Bradshaw, the guy with 4 Super Bowl rings, so why would we want you on our team? Maybe more than any other game I've ever seen, and when I said that, nobody disagreed. Vince Young single-handedly as the quarterback. When the receiver wasn't open, he ran for the yards. He dodged the tacklers. He read the defense. He did all the things you have to do. And another thing about being a quarterback, you got to be able to make split-second decisions. You can't sit there and say, well, now hold on. Just give me a minute. Now, let's see. We got this. We got that. Let me think. I think I'll go with decision B. No, you don't do that. You got to act instinctively. You got to be able to do all this without thinking. It's like a soldier or a fighter pilot. You got to have all this training to where it's automatic when it comes to you. Boom. Your hands and your eyes just do the right thing. Your eyes see something and your hands react. It's just automatic. Well, this Vince Young apparently is that good a quarterback, but he didn't do so good on the book learning test. So that is the last nice thing I'm going to say about a Texas athlete, that if they railroad this guy out of the NFL after the performance we saw on January 4th, whatever it was, that would be a small crime.
You better bang it! Wow! Ow! Put your hands on the radio, baby. Daddy Wet down the roof.
With soul.
Soul power.
All the way.
All the way.
Spoke of, I might have to ally with the Shias and gain a victory that way.
The negative of allying with either the Shias or the Sunnis is, of course, obvious. You are going to find yourself in the middle of their fighting each other.
Right.
So therefore, we have to stand aside and let the slaughter continue, do we not?
Yeah, John, that's good thinking. Good thinking. After we invaded them, you know, Iraq was doing pretty good without us. Then we decided to invade them because Bush said they had mushroom clouds heading our way. So we break in, destroy everything, pull their leaders out of power, turn off the electricity, turn off the gas, turn off everything, fresh water, everything. Everything goes to hell. There's, what, 60 or 80 bombings a day going off in Baghdad now? It's a total fucking mess, and it's all our fault. So John McLaughlin thinks the best way out of this is for America to stand back and let the Sunnis and the Shiites murder each other. To what end, John? How many years, John? You think 2 years will do it? Will 5 years do it? Will 20 years do it? How long do we stand there and let one side murder the other? This is all on us. We're no innocent bystander in this. This is all bloody Bush's fault, every bit of it.
Well, but there, you have to disaggregate the Sunnis. The people who are attacking the Shia are the jihadists under Zarqawi. He hates them as a religious matter, and he is deliberately trying to provoke some kind of religious civil war there. So we cannot stand aside. The other Sunnis are not doing what Zarqawi is doing, and Zarqawi is still our fundamental enemy there. So we have to do something about the jihadists there. We are trying to. It's a very difficult thing to do, but they're the ones who are specifically provoking this kind of behavior.
But wait, Zarqawi is a Jordanian religiously insane hand job. Now he's teamed up with the Sunnis, and so we're going to attack the Sunnis because Zarqawi is from Jordan and he's crazy. He's following bin Laden on some religious jihad, and he's teamed up with the Sunnis who are not religious to fight the Shiites who are religious. Oh, what a mess this is. This is, way to go, George. Way to go.
You see the problem with taking any side in this? For example, if the Sunnis are attacking the Shias attacking the Sunnis in response, and we go to the rescue of the Sunnis, we're going to alienate the
John,
Shias.
John,
and there's going to be a civil war with us in the middle taking the heat from both sides.
John, when you have huge mobs and crowds running around and dynamiting and burning down 95 mosques, the American troops are in battle. They don't have the forces on hand to put a stop to this right now.
And whose fault is that? The idiot monkey that started this stupid war in the first place. Jesus Christ, we've got a mess on our hands. This is going to be a worldwide mess before it's over. And there's no way out of it. If you've been watching Bill Maher every week, he says, I wonder if we should bring back Saddam. And that's always been a joke, but every week goes by, that makes more sense. Saddam apparently was the only guy on the planet that could keep Iraq quiet. And Bush, in his wisdom, took him out, the only guy that can quiet things down.
I think you sort of got to stand aside and see if you can work it out diplomatically and politically, bring the Sunnis in. But if you can't, John, I see the thing drifting towards civil war. If it is, you got to take a look at Tony's scenario or whether we get out.
How in the hell are we supposed to get out? We've lost 2,300 men over there, and now we're just going to say, never mind, our bad, and turn around and leave. Granted, that might be preferable to losing another 2,300 men, but I'm not sure those are our options. That $100 million a day that Bush is stealing, who are we going to turn that over to? Besides, if we leave, isn't Iran going to kick in the door? Remember, Iran and Iraq hate each other, or to put it another way, the Sunnis and the Shiites hate each other. The Shiites control the lower right half, whatever, the southwestern half of the state, because that's the part that's connected to Iran. So if we leave, Iran's got 10 million soldiers. They're going to push over the border and take over. So now we've got Iran, who's got the bombers about to have, rattling their nuclear saber. Let's give them an extra $100 million a day. Perfect. Thanks, George. You fixed it all.
You can't stitch these groups that hate each other under a common government that's going to be inclusive. It's inevitable, I think, that this country splits up, and I think the U.S. ought to get out there and sort of help them make that occur. Otherwise, it's just going to be continuing bloodshed.
The Shias have been attacked over and over again, and Sistani has taken a very measured response. He has actually advocated against violence in the streets. This is the first time he called for nonviolence, but he did say...
We have to see if a government of unity is created. If the Sunnis aren't brought in and the Interior Ministry stays with these guys, then the United States has got to look at the post-government game.
They have death squads and an army going out there pillaging that the government can't control.
If you know your Bush history, they're always on the side of the death squads. Always. No matter what country they're in, if there's death squads, that's the side Bush is aligned with. Because that's how they rule, with fear and terror. Because Bush is the biggest terrorist on the planet.
Point, look, if you have a real civil war, if we don't engage with the Shias to win it, then you're going to have the Turks come in against the Kurds, you're going to have the Iranians come in on behalf of the Shias, the Saudis and others are going to help the Sunnis, and it is a worse situation.
Well, to remind the audience, 60% of the population is Shia, 40% are Sunni,
20% is Sunni,
20% is
20% are Kurdish.
Sure. But you've got a lot, Kurds are having their own internal battle within Kurdistan. Exit question, is this the beginning of a civil war in Iraq, yes or no?
It can hardly be the beginning of a civil war since it's ongoing. If you mean, is it likely that the current civil war will go for years or decades, I'd say the answer is yes. We're going to have peace in the Middle East as soon as people give up their crazy religions that say they have to murder the other guy. That's not going to happen. They would all rather die than give up their stupid religion that says you got to murder the other guy. That's how it is over there. That's how it is here. That's how it is everywhere. Until people replace their idiotic religions with science and logic, we're going to have more murders. It started under Abraham, 8,000 years ago, and it's going to be here 8,000 years from today because people refuse to accept science and logic. Oh, they love the invisible cloud being, and they'll murder for him at the drop of a hat.
I think it is not only in Iraq. I think it's the beginning of a Shia-Sunni conflict that goes beyond Iraq into Saudi Arabia, and I think it involves a lot of other countries and the Turks in Kurdistan.
So the bottom line here, we got Turkey wanting to help the Kurds, we got Saudi Arabia and the others wanting to help the Sunnis, we got crazy Iran trying to help the Shiites, and it's not even going to be contained in Iraq, it's going to be the whole region. They're all going to go crazy. Oh my God. Bush just spent his first 5 years thwacking every nuclear beehive he could find, and now we've got this trouble. You know, the Carlyle Group and those Halliburton, they're all going to make trillions off the coming Third World War. Oh, my God, it's going to be fucking awful. But they're going to make a profit at it, and some of us may even survive. Oh, Jesus, America, what did you do electing this idiot? We told you beforehand. We told you, we tried to get Gore to tell you he couldn't be bothered. We tried to get Kerry to tell you he couldn't be bothered. This guy's an idiot. He's crazy. He's got to be pulled out of the White House. We got to get him out of there before 2.5 more years. Oh, it's not going to get any better. It's only going to get worse. We're going to look back on 2006 as the good old days.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. And I feel fine.
Got Bart? Now you do. Bart Cop Radio.